Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here once again at Red Ice. It's a pleasure to see you. Thank you for tuning in, wherever you're joining us. It is the, what is it, the 5th of July today. That's right. It's the day after America's birthday, Independence Day. I spent that yesterday with some friends. Hope you had a good time if you're in the U.S. or maybe expat or something like that. We're going to talk about some of the obvious clownery out there when it comes to the anti-white agenda. It's not a joke. This is very serious, of course, but it's kind of cartoonish when you look at it. It's so absurd. It's so over the top. And we have a guest with us who has been, I'm not sure, actually sure, I'll ask him more about it, but how long he's been exposing some of the anti-white agenda. Daniel Concannon, thank you for joining us, sir. Good to see you.
Hey, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So tell us a bit, if you don't mind, in the beginning here, are you a big 4th of July guy? I'm not hungover today. I had a beer or two, I think, yesterday or something like that. But did you celebrate Independence Day? Is it worth celebrating? Is America still great?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. It's like, it's one of those ones, you know, I don't want to cheapen it. I mean, there's a lot of meaning to it. And I think unto itself, it's always worth celebrating what the founders did, the bravery of those men, fighting for independence against, you know, one of the world's great empires and achieving it. But like at this point, it almost feels, you know, like I'm a Hulkamaniac, but it doesn't ring the same way it used to. Like, I, you know, I get excited if I hear Hulk Hogan's theme music come on. And it almost, I mean, you know, I don't want to, again, cheapen it to that level. It's not professional if what happened was real, but it does. We have to remember we're not the same nation that those men founded. And to me, it's almost like going to being at war and you're on the battlefield and it's Christmas time or some major holiday like that. And it's because we're facing this open war on white people in this country. And so when the 4th of July comes, yeah, I mean, I love the fireworks. I love the cookouts, the food, all of that stuff. But I kind of sit there and I'm constantly reminded, but look around. The situation we're facing is not good. And it kind of, I end up staying honed in on that. And it's like 4th of July, obviously, has always been a huge deal for this country. But look at what's already going on out there. They're already trying to replace it now with Juneteenth.
That's right. Yep.
With this fabricated Independence Day, you have the anti-white, anti-defamation league out there flying some cockamamie, wrong-colored, tattered American flag in honor of Juneteenth. We know they're going to try to push to make that bigger than July 4th is. And combine that all with the fact, look at the southern border of the United States. Look at the anti-white immigration policy of the United States. July 4th, you know, 1776, we threw off the shackles of England. We revolted against the power that was, but now the so-called United States government is revolting against its own people.
Yeah.
And so it's worth celebrating, but it's worth remembering that we are at war right now and it's not going tremendously well.
Yeah, so I remember a few years ago, and I watched a documentary called Hollywoodism, and we're going to, you know, I know you had some notes later on Hollywood, just how anti-white and insane that is. It's a whole cultural activist, you know, propaganda tool, essentially. But, and then we're talking about this, the shadow version of America that they helped to create with the aid of Hollywood, essentially. And that's what it reminded me of, too. It's like, it's great to be patriotic, nationalistic, and all these things, but then like which version of it is it, right? Is it this shadow, newly created one, right, with all the crazy, the LGBTQ stuff, the anti-white stuff, that just like, you know, it's like that version, or is it the original one? Because the original one, as far as I'm concerned, is a very different country than the one that's out there, kind of mainstreamed in people's faces, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I wish that I could put on like a Stars and Stripes bathing suit and just go bananas and love it. Like, because I'm on the side of the people. There you go.
There you go. Look at that. That's what it's all about right there.
Nothing would make me happier than doing that and just having Hulk Hogan's theme music playing in the background. It's the greatest. It's wonderful. But
yeah,
it's like I think a lot of the people who go in that direction, it ends up a lot of the overstated patriotism is a great thing. Patriotism is a natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's right when it's used the right way. But when it becomes a coping mechanism and it becomes basically an exercise in denial, it's going too far, and we really have to ground ourselves into the reality that we face.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's like you have to kind of take the battle now of trying to regain what it was, at least, or at least strive for it, and then that's worth celebrating, that's worth being proud of, that's worth. But right now it feels like it's just. I don't mean to shit on America or Americans, but it's going down the tubes. It's like most of the West is like this now. I mean, we're all leaving patriotism behind. It's all being globalized and homogenized, open borders. It's all anti-white. We're living crazy times, Daniel.
We are let's face it, we're basically a hollowed out carcass of what was, and it's being picked apart by vultures, by the worst vultures on earth.
Yeah.
Let's remember what was, and let's work, whether it's, I don't want to say working backwards to reestablish that, but look at it as a blueprint, look at it as what you will, but we need to get out from under what we're under right now.
Absolutely, completely correct. Guys, I encourage you to follow Daniel's gab as well. It's Keep NH for New Hampshire Granite. Really good stuff, exposing a lot of the anti-white stuff. I'll get into that a little bit more in a moment. I wanted to just quickly mention to guys out there, because you might be interested, the shooting that happened in Chicago, Highland Park. Several dead. I think the latest one was like six. Was it 16 dead? Was it that many? No, maybe not 16. I forget the details. But anyway, and it was, as we talked about before we came on here, then it was like, why did they highlight this one? There's shootings like every week, and multiple ones in Chicago. Well, it turns out the shooter is kind of a weird, weirdo white kid, it looks like, 21 years old. And it's interesting also that wasn't they just at these new laws that they're talking about, red flag laws and stuff, they wanted to raise it to 21 years old, and here's a 21-year-old kid coming in and doing a mass shooting in Chicago. But we don't have all the details yet, so I'm not asking you to speculate, but it's kind of curious, isn't it, that this is the one that the media is highlighting, right?
Yeah, funny that weekend after weekend, that number goes up and up and up. Chicago, mass shootings every day in this country, mass shootings. We hear nothing of them, but when the shooter's white, yep. Oh boy, here we go, off to the races. The anti-white industrial complex goes into overdrive, and they drive that narrative home, white man bad, white man bad, white man bad,
yeah.
Especially if he has a gun.
Yep, exactly. Absolutely right. Yeah, so Highland Park, some details out right now, but more is going to happen. Apparently more details are going to come out. Apparently he dressed up in women's clothing, I guess, to like, it's kind of like the escape route. This seems very planned, but it's interesting. It was almost like all the mass shootings were kind of like, I don't know how else to put it, on hold for like, it felt like a year, almost 2 years. And then all of a sudden it was like, boom, back on. And just like the anti-gun or gun control agenda was just right back on the map again, Daniel.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, not to go full conspiratorial on it, but as the details shake out, it will be interesting to find out what, Discord servers he was in with other people who may or may not have formerly worked for the United States government. There's a lot of funny coincidences that seem to surround a lot of these situations.
Yep, exactly. So back to the 4th of July a little bit. Apparently there's also a record low numbers in terms of being at least extremely proud to be American. I think all these numbers reflect that, right? Because we live in that age now where it's like it's fashionable, it's hip and cool to shit on your country, at least if you're in the Western world, any European country or any country founded by Europeans for that matter too. A lot of hostility towards the nation. But then there's this weird flip that I've noticed. I'm not sure if you've witnessed that too, but as they managed to kind of twist and turn the country, the liberals and the leftists and all the activists and all the anti-whites and stuff like that, into this new kind of shadow version that we talked about, then all of a sudden, like, patriotism is almost something that they pick up again. All of a sudden, they're the flag banner holders once again now. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, as low, if the parade is full of men with phantom vagina syndrome and women with phantom dick syndrome, and there's children lining the streets, and then you have these bedazzled monsters shaking their fat asses twerking in front of the American flag, suddenly Old Glory's cool again.
Yeah.
But if you're a straight-laced, traditional family white guy, it's the greatest sign of oppression is the stars and the stripes. And it's like, what is American anymore? I think a lot of people have a sense of what it was, but not only has it been intentionally stripped of meaning, but it happens on both sides. Conservatives will be the first ones to jump up and tell you it's an idea. It's a philosophy. It's anybody. If anybody can be American, then being American doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's that if everyone is it, then no one is it. It's just like, what's the differentiation then? You know what I mean? Yeah, it's truly sad. Everything's being homogenized. And again, an effective way, of course, to break down tradition, to break down your sense of roots and your heritage and your anchoring, being anchored to your culture, to your people and so forth, is to multiculturalize everything. Just open the borders and tell. I remember these headlines a while back of like, I think it was like Time Magazine, we're all Americans, or I forget what, we are the Americans now. And it was like all these people who weren't even physically in the U.S. yet. It was just like, okay, what is
that? And then the new Europeans, and it's all non-Europeans on the cover of National Geographic. Yeah, they're hard at work.
Yeah, I even have it right here. I brought in some of this stuff in. There you go, right? Yep, the new Europeans. We're all that now. And of course, we're quickly heading in the direction of becoming minorities in our countries. We'll get into that in a little bit more detail later. But I wanted to play, I think you probably saw it, right? The old military guy, 100 years old, I forget his name now. He was crying over what the country that was lost. Let me play it for the audience, too, in case you guys didn't see it. Listen to this. It's truly heartbreaking. Listen to this, guys.
I don't know. I've lived a good life.
Let me turn that up.
I've had a lot of happiness. Happiness. Smiling, telling everybody that everything was beautiful every day. If I went into my church and didn't say everything was beautiful, they'd think I was sick. And I'm not that way. I mean, I sincerely believe in this old world that everything is beautiful. I mean, if I wake up in the morning and see these plants out here and all those flowers that are in there, and the green grass on the ground, that's beautiful. And people don't realize what they have. They bitch about it.
They do.
And then nowadays, I am so upset that the things we did and the things we fought for and the boys that died for it, it's all gone down the drain. Our country's gone to hell. In a handbasket. We haven't got the country we had when I was raised. Not at all. Nobody will have the fun I had. Nobody will have the opportunity I had. It's just not the same. That's not what our boys, that's not what they died for. It's just not it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, man, it's rough. And I wish, I mean, this is a short interview. I'm sure this old gentleman here has a lot to say and a lot to. I wish we got some more stuff out of what has changed. What have we lost, right? Those kinds of things. And actually talk about it because, you know, I think we'd be agree on a lot of different issues. And it reminded me, Daniel, of this meme. I think, you know, you've probably seen like a reiteration of it anyway, right? That the old guys who did fight World War II, today, basically, they would be called Nazis by the current, you know, leftist, anti-white, shit-lib mob out there, essentially, right?
Oh, yeah. Anything that was ever normal, anything that was ever natural, any natural order, natural hierarchy, it's all evil now. It's fascist. It's Nazi. It's white supremacism. It's all of these stupid terms that they bludgeon our brains with to make us shut up and go away and accept their gender clown anti-white revolution. It's brutal. Yeah. Like, it, you know, the picture in the helmet meme, you know. these men were not looking at Rachel Levine inside their helmet fighting for that future.
Oh,
it's grotesque what's happened.
I did a version of that. I put, do you remember this activist? That's the one I...
Oh, she's my favorite.
Remember what we fought for, right? And what was it? Ashley Shackelford, I think was her name. PayPal me. All white people are racist. PayPal me. That's what we fought for right there, Daniel.
She is an absolute unit, and that is totally what both World Wars were all about. They were
that's
about...
Right.
Ashley Shackelford's PayPal.
Oh my God! This is a reiteration of that of the in England. I think there's like this old veteran standing around like one of the cenotaphs in London there, and they're saying, "Well, at least we're not speaking a foreign language like with German, right? If they would have lost the war, and all these Middle Easterners and Arabs around them, talking."
Yeah, while the public for the speakers are going and the whole public prayers happening in the background.
Yeah.
3,000 guys kneeling in the street.
Exactly right. So is that what was it worth it? Is that anyway? We don't have to get into the whole World War II here thing, but it's sad to see that. That's the bottom line, right? It's super sad to see, and we've lost it, and now we're living in this. Let's play that Black Rock guy, right? He now works for Biden, but he said it the other day, and I think that's what at least what they were trying to accomplish, the liberal world order. Let me just play that clip right there. Oh, no audio on that. One second, guys. Let me pull that up. I'll find it. I'll just edit that real quick. Let me see here. There it is.
What do you
right
say
there.
To those?
Okay, let me go back. Here we go.
The military analyst, the director of national intelligence, they say that this could be a long war measured in years. And I think everybody understands why this is happening. But is it sustainable? What do you say to those families who say, listen, we can't afford to pay $4.85 a gallon for months, if not years? This is just not sustainable.
Well, what you heard from the president today was a clear articulation of the stakes. This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
There you go. That's what it's all about right there. He's a BlackRock guy. He just like the, what do they call him? Not swing door politics, rotating, right? They go from BlackRock to work for Biden and then back to like some other, Vanguard or something, But no, that's what this is. All our so-called freedom that we won have turned into like a gay pride parade, right? An anti-white pride parade.
Yeah, the whole corporatocracy. BlackRock, good Lord, the Larry Fink's minions out here doing his bidding for the so-called liberal world order. I mean, it's funny. It's good that they say things like that out loud, just because it does animate people when they hear things like that. But I almost wonder sometimes, it seems like they're doing it on purpose, kind of just wiping it in our faces, like, yeah, we're doing this. We don't care about your gas prices.
No, that's just it. As everything is going down the tubes, right? It's circling the drain, the toilet, whatever you want to call it. Prices are going up, inflation, there's supply chain issues, there's people are talking about food shortages now, right? There's been attack on farmers for years and years everywhere. It feels like this is coming to a convergence. It feels like it's all orchestrated, like this is a kind of a controlled demolition of Western civilization. What do you feel when you're looking at all this?
Yeah, we're well on our way to you'll own nothing and be happy.
That's right.
Yeah, it's just it's another iteration of that. They put that slogan out, and I think they have every intention of backing it up. And I mean, we're halfway there. Look around. It's frightening. It's not slowing down anytime soon.
No, it's not. It's absolutely insane. And we're expected to pay the price for this. And now it's like the Ukraine thing where people are going like super gung-ho nationalistic about Ukrainian nationalism. I don't have anything against it. It's fine. Go ahead. You know what I mean? But it's like, but anywhere else it rears its head in the West, it's attacked, it's vehemently condemned, it's all white supremacy and things like that. But if it becomes about pouring billions and billions into whatever Ukraine actually is, it seems to be some weird, like, not slush fund, but like some money laundering scheme, what I mean?
No, it's literally a front. It's like the old, in the old days, the pizza parlor, the mafia front. It's It's a front for international organized crime.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. And again, that's what the BlackRock guy was talking about, the liberal world order. No, no, no. This is the price. We have to give Ukraine money. We have to fight this war against Russia. You know, and I don't see Russia as some big savior or anything like that, but it feels like this liberal world order has gone insane in their effort to try to combat Russia, and they're putting everything on the line to, like, ensure that they're winning this war in Ukraine. It's just bizarre watching it, to be honest.
You know, when they put that weight behind anything, you know, any person who has the slightest inkling of how the world works knows to be paranoid and ask more questions. Why are they putting this money, this amount of effort? Not to mention, it's a European nation. It's a white country. So it's very strange that other nations, the U.S., that are so preoccupied with belittling and decimating white people would be so concerned with the outcome there. There must be more than meets the eye.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, just to kind of summarize it a little bit, you know, leftism, call it what you want, really. I don't know, you call it neoliberal capitalism. It's all kind of weaved together now. It's like this third way. It's like they're utilizing the cultural Marxism that we have traditionally within leftism with kind of capitalist market forces, and they're using that as a sledgehammer, maybe a hammer and a sickle against Western civilization. And they've done a number of Europeans worldwide, but you know, definitely in America too, against people of European descent in America. And now, as I said before, many have turned against the country. They've turned against their own people. It's basically all the same all over the West, right? And they hate many of these people. They hate being white. They want to see the country crash and burn, unless maybe it's that shadow version that we talked about earlier. But they work against their best interests essentially at every turn. Is there any antidote to this as you see it, or are these people just lost? Maybe numbers is not what we need. What do you feel about this?
I fear that the great awakening, the greater awakening, the awakening that's necessary may not come until push has come to shove, until it's too late, until we're not simply off the cliff, which I think we already are, but we've hit the ground. I think there's a lot of people, there's the country, a lot of the West is still running on momentum.
Yeah,
it's hollowed out, but it's running on the momentum of yesteryear and the sweat equity that heritage populations put into it. And those same heritage populations that put in that sweat equity, there's been a multi-generational campaign to make them disown themselves and hate themselves and make the others that have been placed into their nations also hate them. It's not good. I think it's so in your face that you get a lot of people waking up. And I mean, that's what I've been out here doing. That's, you know, when it came to my doorstep, I said, okay, it's time to just yell and scream about this, because it's, I don't want to say it's too late, but if it's not, we're almost there. So yeah, numbers wise, there's more and more people waking up, but on the other end of the spectrum, there's more and more people going crazy and getting into the gender revolution and joining the anti-white marching force. So we need to grow our numbers. We need to grow them fast. That awareness has to spread by any means necessary.
Yeah, it's a window of opportunity right now. And the harder they push, the faster they try to boil that frog. Sometimes it feels like they're just throwing it into boiling water already. It's so fast. That's ultimately is helping us. I mean, that's like them doing the work in a way for us, and that's waking people up. But you know, as that window of opportunity kind of is closing, people are going to kind of choose their sides, and at some point it's going to be like, all right, whatever happens after this point, that no more people are going to be able to wake up, kind of thing, right? But tell us a bit about when you kind of, what happened? How did you wake up to some of this anti-white programming and all the indoctrination out there?
You know, I mean, I was never, I never had what you would call a light bulb moment. I mean, I was always tuned into reality. I've never hated myself. I've never been separated from myself. I grew up in a traditional conservative American home. I had a real man for a father. So I always knew myself. I knew my place in the world. I know where I'm from, all that kind of stuff. Stuff that's terribly lacking, unfortunately, in far too many people these days, which is why it's so easy for them to dehumanize white people, because that's what they're doing. But it's there's no I guess since I was always conscious of what was going on, the real switch that was thrown for me was just over a year ago. You know, I had spent the better part of a decade working in the largest school district in New Hampshire. And I guess by some small miracle, I had not faced the whole critical race theory thing, the anti-white thing. And one day they came with the semi to white privilege training. And that was the moment where I kind of decided, okay, they've brought the war on white people directly to my doorstep. So now it's time to yell and scream and fight. And that's where I put my name and my face on everything and said, all right, here we go. I'm going to shove this right back up your asses.
Good.
And that's what I've tried to spend the last year doing, and still out here working at it, chipping away. And, you know, at this point, let's be honest, it's so flagrant. It's so in our faces that it takes effort to not see it. It takes effort to be one of these one race, human race, rock ribbed conservatives. It, just like this bumper sticker communism that fills in for compassionate conservatism. It's all this gross anti-white, anti-American stuff from the 1960s that Conservative Inc. has laid out to its own people. And now they parrot that. And again, a lot of them are waking up, but a lot of them aren't. You see, some of the loudest pushback is not from anti-white lunatics, but it's from people who fancy themselves hardcore conservatives.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
You can put it right in front of their eyes. And, you know, I try to be patient because I appreciate what's been done to us and what's been done to them. It's malicious and it's been effective. But yeah, we're running out of time, so we don't have all day to walk you through every bit of the historical progression of what was brought to this country and how it's encircled. Just go type into the news head, go into the Google News, type in white people, type in whiteness, look at what comes up and face reality that they hate you for one reason. It's because you're white. It's not because you're a human being and they hate all human beings. No, they hate you, white man.
That's right. Yeah, here's a couple of recent books actually published on just like the absolute assault on white people. And then sometimes the hair splitting. No, it's just about whiteness. But then when it comes down to it, you can't, as many of themselves have said, some of these activists, right? You can't have whiteness without white people. So it's like, oh, okay, so you're attacking white people. Of course you are, right? Yeah, there's so many publications, so many books. And you mentioned New Hampshire. I want to ask you a little bit about that because there's some, you know, the Free State Project is up there. I was briefly like libertarian, you could say, and that's kind of associated with that. Today we call them lulbertarian because I think a lot of them, as you said, they refuse to see these things. They think they're going to have their little white, because it's majority white people that are interested in these things. That's just the bottom line of it, right?
Vast majority.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how it is. There are always some people that break through it, but generally, this is a white people thing. And again, I feel that these lulbertarians, there's a refusal to like recognize it's like you won't be able to have this if this country changes its demographics to a point where like they already openly target us. But I mean, as you know, this could go literally from just rhetoric over to actual like suppression and violence very quickly. We've seen that in other countries. Look at South Africa, for example, right? And they will never be able to have that. What do you think about the Free State Project? And what about the libertarian scene up there?
It's good. I feel very favorable towards it now. Yeah, when it comes down to the nitty gritty of truly defending from the war on white people, I think it ultimately it falls short. That movement tends to fall short. Now, if that movement could actually be implemented, or if it had been implemented decades ago, it could serve as a bulwark against the things that we face. But philosophically, I'll say this much. Within the state of New Hampshire, the Free State Project, they have had a real-world effect, and an effect for the better. There's a lot of great state-level reps that get elected in New Hampshire. There's a lot of great legislation that happens at the local and state level in New Hampshire. It is essentially the libertarian capital of the world. Of course, that brings with it a wide range of people within libertarianism. Now, yeah, I spent a long time in that mindset in the libertarian world. I never went there as a, you know, what I would call degenerate libertarianism. I wasn't there as a weed bro. I kind of entered as a brutalist libertarian. And if I've exited, I guess that's the same point I exited from. But that's also what's good. Within the New Hampshire scene, you know, the Mises Caucus is kind of the most powerful within the libertarian movement in New Hampshire. And to me, that was always kind of Hoppian libertarianism, to me, is the only libertarianism.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad to see that they have kind of the steering wheel within the state of New Hampshire. There's a lot of good people involved with that. I think their only stumbling block that I've seen lately was the bizarre entrance of learned doctor of psychology, one Carlin Borisenko, into the Mises Caucus in New Hampshire.
No.
And I mean, that's kind of a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. Oh,
so
boy.
We'll see when that explodes. But no, I commend them. And, you know, honestly, that they've proven what the Free State Project has accomplished. They've proven that a political migration can have a real world effect. They've done that. And so the blueprint is there. And it kind of leaves me wondering, let's call it the dissident right. And I understand a lot of guys will say, well, we can't all go to one place, because if we all go to one place, then we're all, when they come round us up, it's easier for them. And I get that. But there's a blueprint that exists. There's a group of people that have executed it. They've proven real world results, a lot of legislation in this New Hampshire in the direction they've pushed it, in the direction of freedom and liberty. And I think that might be worth considering for the dissident right.
Yeah, I know some people in Sweden, I think Mrs. Oh, man, what is his name now? I forget his name. I'll look at the archives later. But he's a Mises libertarian, but he understood the anti-white agenda. He's openly talking about that now. It's not the only thing, but he's like totally clued in. He understands what's happening. He understands that they want to ruin Sweden and stuff like that. Would you say, on average, libertarians around Free State Project, or if they're in New Hampshire, are kind of clued in on the anti-white agenda, or is it mostly like a no-touch, a hot potato still?
Yes, no, I think they're aware of it. I think, and many that I've spoken to readily acknowledge it. I don't know that they want to prioritize it the way that I might be, the way that I certainly am prioritizing it. I think it's the number one issue that affects our existence right now. But, you know, the thing with libertarianism is it's kind of, and I understand it very well, it kind of serves as a catch-all solution to everything, because it says, well, you are free to associate or disassociate.
Yeah.
And I think that's the draw for a lot of people. They want to escape the hellscape that surrounds us. And if we could simply implement or execute a libertarian agenda, then you have the freedom to disassociate.
Yes.
Discrimination is freedom. Discrimination is inherent in nature. Everything you do, every decision you make is discriminatory. But I think they just kind of fall back to, well, we have the catch-all solution for everything. So if you vote libertarian, if you go libertarian, et cetera, it serves your purpose. And to me, that's not enough, because we have to take it head on. We can't just say, oh, this catch-all over here allows you to this. It's like, no, they're at war against us. We need to take the power that's being wielded against us and wield it against evil people. They have to be turned back.
Yeah, and it's not going to go away by ignoring it. This is like, it doesn't, and they don't discriminate. They don't care what religion you are, or little denomination, or whatever little interest thing you have, right? I mean, you might be able to escape into that for a while, but I think what white people need to understand, and just yesterday I played another video of like a, you know, it's a American Indian or so-called Native American who's attacking a white liberal woman, you know, and he's like, no, this is about race. And she's like, no, it's not. And it's like, well, that whether we like it or not, that's one of the lowest common kind of denominators. And a lot of as the anti-white momentum builds up within all the institutions and news media and culture, You will see anger and resentment against white people because they're blamed for everything. So it's kind of something we just have to like prepare, even if it's justified or not, even if it's like a exaggeration and it's hate filled and stuff. But we have to kind of mentally like prepare us for that. Like they might be coming for us just because we're white one day. I don't see this de-escalating any point, Danny. I think it will just get worse and worse.
They have not spent 60 plus years dehumanizing whites for the purpose of pulling back.
No, definitely.
This level of a dehumanization campaign is the prelude to genocide. And if you think it's anything other than that, that's an absolute cope fantasy. It's a death wish.
Yeah.
If you're going to deny this, and you can look at the United Nations' own definition of genocide. We are there. The conditions are being inflicted upon white people and only white people to drive down birth rates, to cut off the population, malicious anti-white migration policies. It's all there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a lot of it. Let me pull it up here. I have it here, too. The Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This is Article 2, right? And obviously, you know, the obvious stuff people think about when they say genocide is, well, we don't see any mass murder. You could argue, of course, that there is killings now and targeted violence on white people because of the anti-white narrative in the media and stuff like that, right? But it's also about causing serious bodily and mental harm to members of the group. What's happening to our kids right now, right? We're learning to hate themselves just because they're white. Sees as deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. I mean, that's absolutely happening right now. And D says, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. I mean, this is, I don't see how anybody can look at what's happening right now and say, yeah, well, that's happening right now.
We are absolutely there. I mean, it's right in front of your face.
Yeah.
Look around and it's very frustrating when people whose side you're on refuse to take their own side. And that's what we need to start doing.
I know. Well, hasn't there been, I mean, there has been a lot of, mainstreaming of like, you know, the great replacement, right? And there's pushback against that vehemently, you know, kind of in the media and stuff like that, right? But still, I think that's really good. I mean, Tucker, he mentions anti-white stuff. I think he even said anti-white a few times, like actually those words, which is, it's good. We gotta recognize the problem first if we're going to do something about it, right? So it's kind of sneaking in over the last, I don't know, 6 months or so into kind of more mainstream conservative circles. And yes, they're kind of hiding behind, well, they're trying to, what does it say, replace the electorate, right? That's kind of one thing, right? It's just because they want them to vote Democrat. And it's like, well, that's certainly a side effect to this, but that's not the main reason, Daniel.
Yeah, when that's what they'll bring you almost all the way there. And then they tell you at the end, oh, it's actually a replacement of Republicans. It's, first of all, Republicans. Like Democrats, there's no – I guess it's almost shocking how many people still buy the professional wrestlingness of the political landscape. There is no Democrats and Republicans. There's a globalist uniparty. There's an anti-white globo-homo.
Yeah.
That is your political party. Whether you're voting Republican or Democrat, everybody's going to get excited about the upcoming red wave. They're going to sweep the Republicans in. It's a joke. It's another cope fantasy. But to speak to the point of, yes, you know, the verbiage, the mainstream, people like Tucker Carlson acknowledging the open anti-white hate campaign, and even recently Charlie Kirk was out with admitting there was a war on white people. And those are good signs. But I think, you know, what we have to be aware of, those are not things to really then celebrate and say, okay, we've won, let's go, we're finally there. Those guys are forced into those positions. Those guys, when these things have been pushed so far, and there are so many of our voices just outside their doors shouting the truth, they have to crack it. They have to push that Overton window a little bit. And to stay relevant, they have to admit these things.
Yeah.
A little bit at a time.
Yep.
But it is, I mean, it's all the more reason, like, it, for me, it revitalizes me. Push harder. Rag on these guys harder. These guys who don't want to tell the truth. Go at them harder.
Yes.
Bombard them with the memes, with the truth, with the LOLs. Go after these guys to make them keep pushing that direction, because they do have the largest audiences. The people who are captivated by them are the people who most desperately need to be reached, because they've placed their trust in these gatekeepers.
Yeah, I mean, I think activists like you and many others have caused them to be kind of forced our hand a little bit to make them go there. Otherwise, that delegitimizes them. And ultimately, people want to hear messages that reflects the reality that they're experiencing out there and how things are out there. You know, again, that's one of the reasons why Tucker's become so popular. People, I mean, I hear these the kind of left-wing faction of Global Homo, they're still kind of like, you know, you look at MSNBC or CNN or something, they think it's still like, oh, Facebook is not blocking enough, you know, right-wing, or they're boosting right-wing content. And it's like, you know, who's up there? It's like Ben Shapiro, Dan Bongino, maybe Candace Owens, PragerU or something like that, right? They get up there, and by the way...
Dan Bongino's cutting edge, Heimer. I gotta tell you, Dan Bongino's cutting edge. He's got one, you know, he's not your average Sean Hannity, man. He really brings the heat.
Oh my God, it's funny. I mean, if I don't care. I mean, if they start talking about the stuff that really is happening, great, good. You know, like, it doesn't matter. Just as long as it comes out, that's good. But at the same time, it's like this. No, it's Facebook's fault. That's the narrative I hear from the left wing media. It's Facebook's fault. They need to ban and censor more. And my point is like, no, it's in spite of all the censorship that it still reaches out, because it has more of a kernel of truth. It's, as you said, doesn't go far enough. They need to bring everything into the picture and explain more what's happening. But, you know, again, it's a good start. Tucker's talking about it. Charlie Kirk has mentioned it. If we can get that out and push harder on them, they're going to be forced to do that to stay relevant, right? Otherwise, they'll go to other people that talk about these things. And again, I think that's why this massive wave of censorship that's placed part into this too. Like, there was people on YouTube that was catching on too much. They had to control it. But despite that, Daniel, I mean, they managed to slow it down certainly. But despite all the censorship, they just cannot win. And they're so upset that they're like, their stuff is not trending. They feel like entitled to, well, we should have all the views. So when a Ben Shapiro, and I'm not a big fan, obviously, right? But when a Ben Shapiro beats them or a Bongino or something, they're so upset about that, right?
First of all, how dare you not be a fan? How absolutely dare you not be a fan of Ben Shapiro? That's just unacceptable.
All the boomers love him. They just, they're steam valves, right? They're there to like open the steam valve, let out some of the pressure. But they're damn make sure that it doesn't go, in their view, in the wrong direction, right?
And that's why they're platformed.
Yes.
They're
yes.
platformed because they are considered safe. And that's why if you are dissident right, if you are a truth teller, always be bullying when it comes to those gatekeepers.
Yeah.
When it comes to the con ink, when it comes to the people that are put on a pedestal, that are platformed, the way they've managed to turn the internet into television with drastic censorship, deplatforming. The internet has become television virtually before cable, when there was a few major networks that everybody had to tune into if they wanted to have the television on. Now, if you're going to have the computer on, you're going to be of one of a dozen popular apps, social media platforms, and nobody's anywhere else. And they're all controlled. They're all super tightened up. The ultimate irony is if Truth Social's not the funniest thing you've ever seen, like with the most heavily censored platform in the history of the internet, and the warnings that come up that say you're like, your truth has been removed, your truth has been deleted. It's pretty special.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah, if the internet was still what it was, if we still had what everybody used to refer to as the Wild West.
Yeah.
The viewership for programs like yours, for dissident voices, it was happening in 2015.
Yeah.
The most popular voices on the internet were people that no one had ever heard of a year before. Their numbers were through the roof, and it all got, the rug got pulled out from underneath everybody. They came hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people are still struggling. And if we had a fair playing field, our ideas win every single time.
Yes, absolutely. Because that's what it's about right there. No, it's just a little circle jerk. I mean, Zuckerberg gets money from the Ben Shapiro's and the Dan Bonginos and the Candace Owens, right? They pay them millions of dollars. But then on their shows, they're like complaining on them, right? It's just so dishonest, you know? So it's very contrite and very controlled. But eventually, again, I think if there are some platforms out there, and they're starting to pop up, right? Gab is such a platform. Even BitChute, Odyssey, I hope, will persevere as well. Not sure about Rumble, but it's good to have options as much as possible. I think when the YouTubes and the Facebooks ruin themselves enough, which they're doing by controlling and making it contrived, and maybe when the majority of boomers, you know, fallen off of that, then I think there's an opportunity for a lot of these platforms to really grow, and people will ultimately kind of go where the info is. I think kind of Telegram feels like that's such a thing, that it all of a sudden it took off like crazy. And it's still not perfect. Obviously, they still restrict it because of their Apple and Google Play Store, you know, kind of go-between that censors channels and things like that. But all of a sudden, that took off like crazy, especially in the corona times, because it was one of the platforms where you could actually share a lot of stuff, right? So it's just delayed a little bit, but I think it's inevitable of like, you know, the real truth coming out, Daniel.
It's almost shocking that with the demand, with the audience that exists for alternatives, like you said, they are growing, but that becomes the frustration, is that a lot of them are still beholden to those evil titans of the industry. And it's like, yeah, if we could just go back to when YouTube was a free, open, just recreate the internet that was a very few short years ago. And I don't know what kind of pirate internet, who it's going to take, what it's going to take to create that. But I mean, I think it's explosive if it's there. And I mean, that's why I value Gab so much, because as far as sites formatted that way, kind of the Twitter, Facebook format of a thing, which I mean, I'm familiar and comfortable with. And I think that's kind of the average thing for anybody over a certain age. And I mean, you know, Gab's wonderful just because it's like Gab is what the entire internet used to be. And that's why it's shell shocking for people who show up there and go, oh, I didn't know you could say stuff like, yeah, this used to be everything. First, it used to be real life.
Yep.
Then it used to be the old West internet. And as of the last 6 years, yeah, there's barely anywhere you can find this stuff, but it's there. And when people come, and that's another thing, like anybody who won't, you know, you get these GOP phonies and frauds and people who say, well, we won't go, I won't go to Gab because of this, that, and the other. It's like, they're phonies and they're pussies. They're liars. If somebody won't go have an account on Gab, give me a break.
Yeah, was it Abbott, Texas, right? Didn't he make, or someone set up an account or something for a while, and it's like, oh, good, they're there. And then it was like, no, ADL came out or something out of the woodwork, and like, it's anti-Semitic content there, and they closed it down or something. It was something.
I don't
like
know
that,
if right? Abbott had the account, but I know that Abbott certainly had himself out on stage crowing about, not, you know, restricting Gab, and Texas doesn't stand for
That's
the
right.
things that are said on Gab. He was doing that whole routine there. Yep, following right along on Jonathan Greenblatt's script.
Yeah, here it is right there. Texas government Governor Abbott calls Gab anti-Semitic. That's right. The whole platform is anti-Semitic. Maybe he shouldn't tell his own party. Oh, anyway, Vice News, what are you going to do? Let's take a short little break, and then we'll continue more. We haven't kind of felt like we've gone into the meat of this yet. There's so much to talk about, but we're going to talk about the institutions. We're going to talk a bit more about all the crazy anti-white out there. I want to hear about some of the other stuff that's on the wall. What do you feel about them? Even the abortion issue, that's kind of interesting. Talk more about the how to reverse the replacement agenda, maybe even the low birth rates and things like that. But Daniel, tell us how people can follow you, and do you have any way of asking people to support you out there so you can keep doing what you're doing? Give us some details.
I'm just Gab's my home base. That's the only spot I'm really at. Obviously, I'm too white for Twitter, so that got zapped quite a while ago. But just Gab, my handle is KeepNHGranite. KeepNHGranite, all one continuous word. Come find me there. I am doing my best to stay up and keep people informed on the war on white people, because the premier issue of our time.
Excellent. All right, ladies and gentlemen, check out the links down below. We'll link Cap Daniel's Gab as well. Make sure you follow him there. A lot of good posts on there, a lot of good stuff that you will be tuned into. So, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with part two with Daniel. Stay tuned. Join us for the second part with Daniel over at redicemembers.com. You can also sign up at subscribestar.com/redice. Watch the second part of our interviews. Get access to our exclusive member show, Weekend Warrior. And, of course, you can watch other exclusive videos only for members. We appreciate you. It's only $10 a month. But we do have a couple of other payment options as well, where you can sign up for a 3-month, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, and 2 year subscription. And the longer subscription you get, the cheaper it gets per month. A 2 year one will give you a whopping 35% off almost. Also, thank you to our executive producers, T. Lothrop, Stoddard, Tom Bourne, V. Miller, and Loki's Lad. Thank you, guys. We can't do this without you. We appreciate you. If you want to sign up over at Subscribestar, we do have a plus tier. It's a Red House membership plus a donation. We also have the producer and executive producer tiers for those of you guys who want to do a little bit of extra and support Red Ice even more. And you get your name read out as well at the end of the show. So thank you so much, guys. We appreciate you. We can't do this without you. If you don't want to sign up for a membership, consider donating to support the show. RedIce.tv/donate. Join us over at RedIceMembers.com or Subscribestar.com/RedIce. We'll get going on the second part right now. And don't miss that, because we're going to dive deeper into why these conservatives are refusing to recognize the anti-white agenda, and how CRT, critical race theory, have kind of been used really just to mobilize around the GOP and the Republicans without actually any solutions in sight. What do we do to fix that? Join us for part two.